let's quickly review what we've done. We started by looking at relational databases, which are at the core of almost every organization, and we've seen how we can use SQL or structured query language to write queries against that relational database system and get the data we need, at least in theory, for business decision making. Then we went off in a slightly different direction and said, you know, wouldn't it be great if someone in the organization could write some extract, transform, and load routines to take data from the operational working database system and put it into something a little bit more amenable to decision analysis, like a data warehouse, which has a different structure and it's read-only and so on. Because once the data is stored in a data warehouse in a multidimensional data model, then it's very easy to link up one of the many visual analytics tools to that data and then explore the data without having to write a bunch of structured query language. Now, the only thing we haven't talked about at this point is then this other step, which is how do we go from the relational data to more complicated models, something way beyond visual analytics, to a model that we can use for understanding causation and even prediction. That is the point of this lesson. It turns out that a number of challenges or issues arise as we go from transactional data, like we've seen to this point, to data analytics. Those three issues are, first of all, the granularity of the transactional data. It's typically too fine-grained to be of any use to us. The second, which we'll talk about in more depth, is this idea of data integration. Do we have enough so-called explanatory variables in the data to actually create a good causal model or a good predictive model? And the third issue, which we're barely going to touch on, is this issue of adequate variance. Statistical models and data mining models thrive on variance. They need variance to uncover potential cause and effect relationships. And if the data doesn't have that variance, then really there's not much we can do. Let's take a closer look at some transactional data, which means it comes from a transaction processing system like an order entry system. So what we see here is we have data that captures a particular product being sold to a particular customer on a particular date. And then using the quantity and the unit price and the discount, we can calculate on the fly the total sale. So the question is, well, this total sale then is the dollar amount. It's probably the thing we are interested in understanding or predicting using data analytics. But let's take a step back and see where these lines in this transactional data come from. Remember, this is an order entry system, so each line, each transaction corresponds to a line item in the order. And the question then becomes, well, would we want to predict or understand this total sale value given that, I mean, let's face it, total sales is just quantity times price. So it's very easy to understand where this comes from. We might want to instead understand this quantity ordered because, of course, it reflects a decision made by our customers based on our products. But again, at this level of granularity in a particular order, you might think that this number bounces around a lot. That is, it's highly subject to random noise. It doesn't really give a sense of what are our best-selling products or who are our good customers. One advantage of moving transactional data from an operational database to a data warehouse is that it then becomes relatively easy to change the granularity of the data. So recall that in a data warehouse, we structure the data using a dimensional data model in which we have things like products and customers and time. But then each of these dimensions has its own hierarchical levels. And by using what is effectively a SQL group by clause, we can then change the granularity of, say, time to only look at sales by month or sales by year. That is what we've done here. We've aggregated by order year, and now we can take a look at each row in the data and try to figure out what it means. So we have the total sales here for each year for every combination of customer and product name. So you have to ask yourself, is that a useful measure? Is that something we want to understand or predict? Well, the first thing to recognize is that the cross product of every possible customer and every possible product is going to generate a lot of zeros. Most of our customers don't buy all of our products in a given year. And then from a prediction point of view, it might be a little specific to focus on the interaction of products and customers. It might make more sense, depending on the business, to just look at customers, which properties or attributes of our customers allow us to differentiate between those who buy a lot and those who don't buy as much. Similarly, we could collapse the customer dimension entirely and focus on the annual sales of each product. What products sell the most and what are the characteristics or the attributes of those products that allow us to understand or predict those sales. The purpose of this demonstration is to show what happens when we have data of the wrong granularity. So right here I have the Northwind Traders data, and if I open it up in data view, I see that it's very fine grained. I have a particular product being sold to a particular customer on a particular day. And then this is the amount. And of course, this amount is sort of useless because it's subject to a lot of luck. Okay, so what we want to do now is use the tools of database, specifically the group by operator, to change the granularity. And I'll show you what I mean by that. So anytime I have the data, I can hit the query builder in SAS. And like all other query builders, we have an area that shows us what's available to us, and we have an area over on the right here where we define what we want our outputs to be. So say I want to change the granularity to just focus on products. Okay, so I describe products most obviously with their product name, and I want to see the total sales then for each product. Okay, now remember, in terms of time granularity, I probably am not that interested in the day or the month because that's probably too fine-grained. Let's say I want to look at order year. Okay, so I add those three things just like before, and this would still be very fine-grained data. The trick in SAS Enterprise Guide is to come over to the summary column and for amount specify an aggregation operator. So an aggregation operator is an operator that does something with a bunch of data, sums it up, averages it, counts it, or whatever. So typically for this kind of thing, we use sum. Now notice what happens down here in the bottom part of the query builder is SAS has automatically done the group by. It's created groups. So basically it's saying, give me the sum of amount for every unique combination of product name and order year. Okay, so if we run that, then we get exactly that. We see the product is LS Mutton, and we see its sales in 96, you know, some value, and in 97, we're slightly higher. So that's how you aggregate using the query builder. Now, of course, we should come back and we should change this to something that we will understand later. And if we want, we don't like this automatic label here, we can double click this and call this total sale, like we've done before, maybe sale. And then we run it, we get this nice tidy data, and then we could conceivably use this for analytics. Now, of course, right now we don't have many attributes of the products. So again, we can come back and modify task. Now, when we look through all the fields that are available, we see we have a small number that actually relate to the product. These are attributes of the product. Things like, I'm going to move year up, in fact. So we have the product name, of course, which is the finest grain. But for each product, it belongs to a category. So each category has many products, but each product only belongs to one category. Each product, we assume, only has one supplier. Suppliers have a home country, let's assume. Okay, so now when we run that, we get the exact same values, we get the same total sales, but then we get some additional attributes of the product that may or may not be useful when it comes time to do. One of the things that came up in the aggregation demo is the need to add additional columns, additional explanatory variables to our results. This is what allows us to go on and do causal analysis or make predictions. Most transaction processing systems, especially if they've been transitioned to a data warehouse, include some additional information. So for example, here in the products dimension, we see various levels whereby, for example, we start with a product, but we also have the product category, the supplier, the supplier's country, and so on. And as we saw, it's a relatively simple matter to add those to the result set. So we're left with something like this. But then the question becomes, is this enough? Is there something meaningful we can do with this data? One way to understand the limitations of this transactional data we have been looking at is to compare it to another data set, in this case, the video games data set. So the video game data set that we've been using is clearly an aggregated products data set. So for example, we have the title, which is the name of the product, and then we have, in fact, two levels of aggregation. We have sales aggregated just over the year in which the game was released, and then we have this so-called life-to-date sale, which is the lifetime sales of the game. So there's no mention of customers. The customers dimension has been collapsed, and this is information about and is a focus on the attributes of the product. So not surprisingly, the data set includes the kind of product characteristics that we might find in transactional data, like the brand, the license, who made it, subgenre, and things like that. Someone's put that together, but it's naturally part of this data set. But the data set also provides some evidence of deeper data integration. What do I mean by that? Well, here, for example, there's data that is integrated from external sources. So the ESRB rating comes from a different body that has been added to the data set. The review score, which would have been very difficult and probably very expensive to collect for every game, has been added to the data set. Why? Because someone had a hypothesis that ESRB and review score would be good predictors of game success. In addition from these external sources of data, we also have derived measures. What do I mean by that? Well, these are measures of the market context, or in some cases, competition, that is derived by pre-processing the transactional data. So you didn't have to go to a third party necessarily to get this, but you did have to do some programming and some ETL work. So for example, the row in the data set that shows Halo 3 and provides the sales performance of Halo 3, we also see these measures, prior sales brand and total prior sales brand, which are the measures of performance, both life-to-date sales in units and life-to-date sales in dollars, of prequels to that game, in this case, Halo 1 and Halo 2. The sales of these prequels then become an attribute of this game, Halo 3, which may or may not have predictive power. As we'll see, value of the franchise turns out to have enormous predictive power. We conclude from all of this that transactional data often is not enough for business analytics. What we need is some level of integration with other data. Now, data integration also entails two things. One is domain knowledge. Someone has to understand the business domain well enough to make hypotheses about what kind of additional data will provide new insights. The other thing you need, quite obviously, is then a budget. Although transactional data might be found data or exhaust data, often integrating this with other explanatory variables is much more difficult. It's not just exhaust data, it's actually effort and cost. Now, the third possibility is to go back to this idea of derived measures. And this is a very popular approach because it turns out to be quite a bit cheaper. Conceptually, the issue is simple. Typically, you start with the customer-only dimension, you collapse sales over the product dimension, and you focus on different slices through time. So for example, you look at a customer's sales from the previous period, and that becomes then an attribute of the customer for the current period. The most popular approach to this is typically called RFM, where RFM stands for recency, frequency, and monetary. And these are pretty simple. Recency just means how long since your last transaction as a customer. Frequency is a measure of how many transactions has the customer made with your firm in the previous time period. And monetary is the kind of stuff we've been looking at already, which is calculating the amount of money someone spends and using that then as a predictor of how much this customer will spend in the future. We can see how RFM type measures might work by returning to our transactional data. Here we've collapsed the product dimension entirely and aggregated on year to give the annual sales for each customer. We then wrote a routine to transfer the sales from 1 year into the row for the sales for the subsequent year. So part of the data about Alfred's Fruticus sales in 1998 is now this prior amount value from 1997. The next step is to ask whether this matters. So what we can do is run a regression, which is something you'll do a lot of later in this course. We can run a regression of some measure of prior amount as the explanatory variable and some measure of current year sales as the response variable. And we see that, in fact, there is sort of an upward sloping relationship. It's by no means absolutely perfect or even perfectly linear, but it is what we call statistically significant and positive, which suggests that prior sales does help predict or explain current year sales. Now, it's important to recognize that this is not the same as a root cause. That is to say, prior amount is just a proxy. It's a proxy for all those factors about the customer, which we haven't measured, but contributed to that customer making big sales in the past. And our hope then is that those same factors will be in effect to make that customer make big sales in the future. So in this sense, prior amount and basically all RFM measures are less measures of root cause than they are measures of momentum. The final issue or challenge we want to talk about in the context of transactional data is the problem of inadequate variance. It's important to recognize that a lot of the techniques we use in business analytics, including statistical analysis and machine learning, rely on the variance between two variables to spot relationships or patterns. So to illustrate the problem, consider a situation in which we run a skateboard shop and we decide at at some cost and at some level of controversy to collect the ages of our customers. So the only reason we do this, of course, is if we had a plausible hypothesis that age had some kind of explanatory impact on sales. When we plot our data, which is transactional data on sales compressed by customer, and plot that against age, we might see the following problem, is that a lot of our customers seem to be in the same relatively narrow age band. So when it comes time to model the relationship between age and sales, there's really nothing for the algorithms to grab onto. The variation in age cannot be used to explain the variation in sales because there's really not enough variation in age. Statistically, then, we would conclude that age has no significant impact on skateboard sales when common sense and our data make it very clear that just the opposite is true. In fact, age is such a determining factor that we don't get anyone but a certain age of customer. To summarize this lesson, we see that we have these three issues or challenges that we have to deal with. The first is granularity. Transactional data almost always has to be aggregated in some way, and the appropriate level of granularity is a business decision. The second issue is data integration. Transactional data seldom contains enough explanatory variables to make business analytics worthwhile. So the implication then is that you either have to go out and acquire and integrate data from external sources, sometimes at fairly significant cost and effort, of course, or you can also derive new attributes based on the transactional data, but this, of course, requires some skill and maybe some specialized technical tools like extraction, transformation, and loading software. At the very least, you need to be a SQL ninja. The final problem, which we just touched on, is this idea of inadequate variance, which may arise in transactional data just by virtue of the way your business runs. Now, the only way to get around this is to add more variation into some of your data. And a lot of companies do this on purpose. So they run operational experiments or things like A/B testing, where you intentionally include variation into, say, your website design in order to see whether different approaches yield different results. At the very least, you should be aware that adequate variance can be a problem and then temper your conclusions accordingly if you see that you lack enough variance to make strong conclusions.